Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guests, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about suicide, and not in the way, perhaps, that many are saying, I'm struggling with it, it's a hardship, it's a burden to carry. Really, what we're going to do is take it all around full circle. What is it all about? Is it an exit door? Is it something that society is saying, oh, it's so terrible? Is it something that we're saying, maybe someone has said, I think that's my choice? But maybe we look at, what is suicide really about? The action, the exiting of life. What was life about? Was it going towards something? Were you maybe living life but not really being engaged? Were you really just maybe going through the motions and things weren't working out too well? And how everything after the act of suicide, you would say, it leaves your family disoriented. It leaves them lost. There's a lot of guilt and shame. And what are all the burdens we carry? Really, the whole story at end of life is all about all of these things come forefront, our emotions, the way we've lived life, the way we choose to go on, how each other has imprints that they leave with us. And it's really about all the exploration of life. My guest today is Sebastian Slovin. His book is Ashes in the Ocean, a son's story of living through and learning from his father's suicide. Sebastian, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Jeanette.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. Sebastian, I think, you know, when we think about the word suicide, you can take that 360 all the way around and then some, don't you think? There are so many thoughts, concepts, beliefs, and pain and suffering, but sometimes just a release that many people are having different times with it, yes?
Yeah, I think certainly it's a, depending on who you're talking to, it can mean a lot of different things. And I think it's certainly a complex thing, you know, a lot of factors going on.
Yeah, I think sometimes when we hear the word, people throw up their own version of it and everybody has to abide by it. But then you throw up the word and someone else says, you know what, but I found a way through it. I found a way to see past it. I found a way to walk in their shoes. I found a way to learn something from it. And I think that's really where the evolution now we're coming to is that we don't harbor and say, carry, you know, the baggage of victims or martyrs and stuff. We kind of say, oh, or what I could have done or enabler. We say, you know what? Let's learn. Let's be present. Let's celebrate the lives that everyone has. Yes?
Yeah, I think well said. And everyone's going to have their unique path, right?
Yeah, because but you know what? It's always about celebrating life, though. Do you know what I mean? Everybody exits, but we still want to celebrate their life. And I think what you did in your book is you really celebrated your father's life by walking through his path, by going back to all the places that he was and speaking to all the people that knew him. And isn't that really what it's all about?
Yeah, so that's a really good point. I think when he died, I was really young at the time. I was 6 years old, and his suicide really, I think, cast a shadow over, you know, our family. And I think the way I looked at his life, you know, moving forward. And yeah, I think the process of when I was older of kind of stepping in and learning more about, you know, who he was as a person, you know, why he died, and, you know, just digging into his story a little bit more was one of the beautiful things that came out of that was, as you said, I think it was a way for me to really look at his life holistically and not just as it defined by his death.
Right. It's not about the door or the label. It was about look at all everything else, you know? And they had such a great they had just as well a life as anyone else. You know, when someone would drive down the street and they get in a wreck because they've been drinking, you know, we always look at it, oh, that's a terrible thing. But we forget about all the other times of that person's life, you know. Or maybe someone who, you know, if they get cancer or if they have a lifelong chronic illness or if they plain just die naturally early or whatever that might be, sometimes we look at that in a different light versus all of the other ways that people choose to exit the world. And then we sometimes say, but you know what, there really was a person there. Tell me about the person, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think honoring, you know, whatever path, however long, it's an important thing to do. And it's easy, I think it's specifically with suicide or you know, these types of things, it's easy to lose sight of that and kind
right.
of just only focus on the exit, right?
Right. Well, Sebastian, your book starts right out. You talk about when you were young and about swimming with your father. And really, I wrote on the top of the page that he really brought you inside his world. You know, he really wanted you to, I guess really what he wanted to do was to bring you inside how he felt, his emotions, and how he was one with the water, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, and to give some more context, too, you know, he was this an incredible swimmer. He's from South Africa originally, but grew up swimming competitively, and not only in the pool, but in the ocean as well, so he was really
mm-hmm.
comfortable out in the water no matter where it was, and yeah, as you said, he kind of brought me into that world. Although this is, you know, a pretty frightening world for me as a little person getting
mm-hmm.
out in the ocean. But yeah, it was incredible, an incredible way to see, you know, to see the world through his eyes. And it taught me a lot by bringing me out in the water at a very young age.
Right. And then you all started moving around to be able to go to different places because your father felt, you know, it was better, let's go here, or something would be better there. Don't you think that maybe in a way he was a seeker for his soul? You know, I wrote that on the page too. He's a real seeker. And that he was looking for something that there was somewhere else. What do you think he was looking for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, at the time, of course, I was a little kid and we were just traveling. You know, I grew up in San Diego
mm-hmm.
in Southern California. And, you know, a few years after being born, my dad kind of had it in his mind that, you know, he wanted to raise us somewhere else, me and my sister and my mom as well, you know, bring her along as well. And, yeah, set it on this path to, you know, he was like, wanted to go. We moved to Australia, but when we were there, he wanted to go to, you know, a different part of Australia, and then wanted
right.
to come back to the States. And yeah, it was, you know, at the time as a little kid, it was just sort of this big adventure to me. I was like, oh, this is different. People talk differently over here,
right.
And it was this kind of big adventure. And as I got older and kind of came back to that and talked to the people who, you know, talked to my mom and other people who knew him well, yeah, he was certainly searching for something, right? It was, you know,
mm-hmm.
what's interesting, what I find really kind of curious about it is that from the outside looking in, you know, everyone
right.
thought my dad had it all. He was, you know, he made good money, you know, top business guy,
right?
Great athlete, you know, beautiful family, beautiful house when we were living in San Diego. And but to him, there was always something missing. And so he, you know, searched, I think, externally, you know, different
right.
wanting to be in different locations or you know,
mm-hmm.
attain different things in the external world that was maybe trying to make up for something that he was having trouble finding within.
You know, I also think, too, if you look at the years that your father was struggling and the things that were happening, those were the years, like 1990s and so, those were the
mm-hmm.
years that definitely, it was all about the I. You had to have a bigger house. You had to have more money.
Mm.
Everybody was going back to school more. You had to expand. And it seemed like wealth was the name of the game and everybody couldn't get enough of it. It was almost like an addiction. That was when drinking was really high. People were doing a lot of cocaine and stuff then.
Yeah.
And that was really a time then. Everybody was saying, there's more out there. Gimme, 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 gimme. But really,
yeah.
in a way, if your father was doing that externally, he was trying to be in the world that he saw outside of himself, to fit in. In other words, we always want to have something better to look validated in the world. In other words, hey, I'm here. Yeah, don't you see? I have all my house and everything, blah, blah, blah. But then when he probably got to swimming, he was like, that's where his soul was complete. And I really think that that dichotomy between the both is really about, you know, that struggle. You know, when I'm swimming and when I'm one with the world, isn't that enough? Or do I really have to have a conquest and all of this other stuff to be able to be okay? Don't you think a lot of people might struggle with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, and that's one thing I saw clearly was, as I got older, was that, you know, I kind of set out on this path to learn more about my dad and why he did what he did in my late teens, early 20s. And, you know, I saw that I was doing a lot of these same things, like looking for, just to back up, I was doing a lot of competition as well. I was a competitive bodyboarder, which is a little bit like surfing. And I was, you know, as I was learning about this, I saw myself. Yeah, I was doing this. I was seeking. Needing to be the best, needing to win, needing to, you know, get this particular wave in order to be okay, which really wasn't what it was all about. But it was confusing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough place to be in. And also, too, your father had a stint in the hospital at time. And I think that's really where a lot of people come to. They say, okay, I have no idea what it is. And I really call that the time of the darkness of the soul. A lot of people have had that, and they've said, I give it up. I send all my identity. I don't know what it is anymore. I can't figure out this world. Check me out. You know, and remove me from the space that I feel like I'm spiraling in. And when it's a dark night of the soul, a lot of times people will say, I don't really know what's going on, but I just don't fit here anymore. Perhaps maybe that was something similar, yes?
It certainly could have been. Again, yeah, you know, when I was, that was going on when I was really young. And you know, I think it was, I think, probably a very confusing time for him. You know, and a frustrating time where he, you know, I talk about this in the book where, and you touched on it and spoke about it very well, where I think he was constantly looking for reassurance in the external world, you know, and I think a lot of his sense of, I'll clarify on that, a lot of his sense of value was in his looks, his physical ability, in the, you know, his financial status, his house, all those things. And, you know, he did, it seemed like he did achieve these goals, whether it's swimming or financial, and be happy for like a very short period of time. And then it was kind of this emptiness again and constantly searching. And I think to the point of exhaustion, you know, and deep frustration, right? Where
today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
You know, and that's really definitely the cycle, is that they will, you know, we figure it out and we say, oh, I'll get it because they're telling me to do it or it's something I should do. And then you get there and you know it's not the right place to be. And really, I think that we look at it, you know, in the after 2000, you know, when the banks collapsed, everybody said, oh, you mean I have to give my big house and my car? You know what I mean? And then now we're seeing it in your age group where it's like, you know what? Enough is enough. I don't need all of that. And I'm just as happy living my life as simply as it might be. So I think really what we look at is the evolution of history, especially when we imprint our life in like what years we lived and what years things happened to us. Perhaps maybe if you looked back into your father's ancestry lineage, you might see that they had a very hard life and they had a hard struggle. And then maybe it was before him, he maybe saw his grandparents struggle or his parents. And then eventually he says, okay, I got it. So I kind of made it, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden it wasn't a thing either. So we look back and, you know, I even look at my own grandparents. I mean, I'm in my mid-60s and I look back at my grandparents and they came over from Ireland with nothing, you know. And then why did you leave Ireland? It's because it was so drastically poor. And we say, well, okay, well, we had to get it. So I think it's more about humans learning about humans right now and evolving. And that's really, how are we telling our story about how we're evolving? And that's what your book is all about, Ashes in the Ocean, how your father evolved through his story, how when you went back and you evolved through it, and now how you're free from it and how you're living your life versus continuing the pain or the shame or the guilt or the lessons that many generations before you might have carried.
Yeah. I think there's certainly something to be said about that time. That late 80s and the time of just like, you know, wanting, needing it all, right? And also, I think, you know, one thing that became clear to me was, you know, he was sort of the epitome of like the, you know, the man who just kind of like the man who can't be vulnerable, who has to, you know, who has mm-hmm. to have it all together all the time, you know, have all the things. And there's sort of a gender, you know, factor there too with in a place where maybe it's, you know, I'm sure it's combined, but partially
right.
generation and also being a guy where he felt like he didn't feel comfortable reaching out for help or being vulnerable. You know, I saw him, I think, one time when he was not doing well in the hospital where he was mm-hmm. where he was crying. But, you know, any other time, no matter how much pain he was in, he was just, you know, had a smile, kind of like put this sort of mask on that everything was okay all the time. I think that in combination with the time that he was in played a role for sure.
Yeah, it sure does. It really shows up the masculine and the feminine and about how they're evolving in the world today. You know, and also let's talk for a second about after your father did take his life, about, I call it transfer of being, when you then had taken on his position. In other words, when that space is vacated and you step into it, don't you think that when you have that, you're pretty much living, not only living in the shadow, but you've actually put the shoes on and be able to live, you know, to try to feel, it's almost like you're living out his legacy kind of idea, which maybe trying to struggle through it, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, after he died, you know, obviously that was a major change in our family dynamic. He left us in a pretty bad financial position. So it was interesting, you know, my mom did an incredible job of you know, stepping up and working very hard to, you know, get us out of that kind of financial situation that we're in and provide for my sister and I. And because she was around a lot less, I kind of stepped up into a more of a, you know, like father figure role to my sister, my younger sister, and kind of, the man of the house, quote unquote, from a young age. And I think I took on a lot of that pressure,
right.
You know, it's, you know, it wasn't really, I wasn't aware of it, of course, at the time, but the kind of need to have it all together. I did my, you know, I worked my hardest to seem like I had it all together, even though I felt like deep down that I was destined to follow in my dad's footsteps, you know. And I think another piece of this is that because of the shame and the stigma, you know, in our,
mm-hmm.
We never talked about it really as a family. I never talked about it to my friends. And it was
right.
this thing that I kind of kept under wraps for many years. And you know, as we know, and that doesn't really help out the situation when you're kind of, you think you have this, you know, thing you have to keep secret, or, you know, people will judge you or shame you or whatever.
Well, really, in essence, your chapter is entitled The Race. And really, what it seems as though you were walking his path. So in other words, nothing really shifted when he passed. You just kind of kept up his paradigm of whatever he believed or what he thought. So in other words, you said, I'll take your shame, I'll take your guilt, I'll take your passion, I'll take whatever it is, and I'll see if I can get to the top of the mountain. So kind of that's like, you know, when you get into that paradigm, that's a pretty heavy load to carry, don't you think?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that chapter. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but, you know, one of the first things I remember doing after he died, you know, of course, was, you know, like shocked and overwhelmed. But one of the first things, you know, kind of pieces of action I did was I wanted to swim in this race, the junior version of this race called the La Jolla Roughwater Swim that he had swam in and won basically like every year that he entered, like 10 years in a row. And it's interesting. I think he was my hero. So I, you know, wanted to be like him, but very much, it seemed like I was stepping into his shoes. But I felt in that particular race, that first year after he died, I couldn't put so much pressure on myself to be the best that I kind of had a breakdown before the morning of the race, and I couldn't go. I didn't want to show up. And so I felt like it was better for me not to, you know, not to race than to potentially come in second place or worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think sometimes too, the idea that, that we just said in the beginning of our talk about your father finding his value, isn't that really what you were trying to do, was to say, what's my value? And you really, he just said it, and I just thought of it, is that your value was really second place. You were trying to find his value, which was first. So you were always running in second place.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
Yeah, and until you really shed that sucker, you know, I mean, like, it's really like an octopus that comes over you. It eats, it breathes, it's very saprophytic. It will really eat off of you and feed off of you. Until you come to the place where, who are you? And I really think that's where you started your journey, don't you think? Is going out to figure out, hey, okay, let's figure this out. Let's walk through this, and maybe then I can set his story free, right?
Yeah, definitely. This wasn't really conscious in my mind as a, you know, in my late teens. But yeah, I did have a major turning point. You know, I kind of went from feeling like I was destined to go down this path, playing the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a really life-changing conversation actually with one of his good friends, a person he grew up with in South Africa. His name was John David. But I went to Australia to stay with John David. And when I was 17, it turned out that John David's father had taken his own life as well.
Right.
And when he shared that with me, it was so inspiring and cathartic to hear him talk about his experience, and I felt because he had been through it, you know, I felt okay sharing with him about it. And that was, I think, the beginning of me then kind of consciously going out and trying to put the pieces of the story back together so that, you know, eventually I think I could shed the story.
Right. You know, and it's really interesting is that, you know, when you had spoken about the doctor that said, you see it's in your genes, you know, when they talk about suicide.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I'm telling you, I have this little booklet that I call Kicking Words to the Curb. And that is like, oh, gosh, don't say that. Because when they say G-E-N-E-S, genes, I'll say no. It's just in my jeans pocket and I'm ready to let it go. Do you know what I mean? Because
yeah.
And that's the truth, because really, you know, I mean, here's the question. Does your imprint control your existence? So, I mean, your father was a really good teacher of martyr or victim or whatever you want to call it. In your eyes, that's how you perceived it at that time. And if you perceived it at that time, does that imprint control how you're going to choose to exist? And it's really like, no, I don't choose to exist that way. However, I think we really have to sometimes dance with the demons, more we call it, is really dance with all of the energies of life. Life isn't totally, you know, lollipops and candy. It's really, there are dark times. There are hard times. There are times when we are the victim or the martyr, or when it's hard this or that. And it's really about dancing with it and feeling it and knowing it and everything. But then the answer is, okay, now I'm going through it. In other words, when you're done enough with the dance, then you go through it. Sometimes people choose to exit prior, just before that, when they're ready to go through it, to be done with it. And sometimes people will say, I'm done with it, and now I can go. So there's many different ways people think about it. But really, when they say about it's in your genes, don't you just want to go, Let's stop right there. No, it's not, right?
Well, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting thing, right? And I think what you're referring to is when I was quite young at the time. I think I was like 13 years old, and you know, was never talked about my dad's, never told the truth about my dad's suicide to a physician or really anyone. And you know, when they asked my health history, I shared the truth in this particular exam. And her whole expression changed, and it became really serious and tense. And she was like, you know, this is something you have to really watch out for. It's in your genes. You know, you're much more likely to be to suffer from depression and to be suicidal,
right,
and all these things. And at the time, I was like, holy smokes, you know. Like,
right.
I'm never going to share about my dad again. And then also that just reinforces the belief that I already had, which was, you know, there's something wrong with me by association and, you know, genetically and all that. And I think, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not a scientist, you know, a psychologist. I don't do research on this, but, you know, I've read a lot, and there is a legitimate, you know, there's some genetic aspects to this that is real. And I don't want to dismiss that, but I think the important part is that if I were to believe that as a young person, or, you know, no matter what age, that I was destined because of some, you know, some genetics to go down this path, I would have, you know, that's the end of my, I think, free will. I would just have no choice. And it would be hard to, I think, maintain a healthy or positive outlook from there. So I think, yeah, I think it's right. It's a super complicated piece. There's certainly, you know, physiology involved and biology involved with this and things to be aware of. But I think I think the power of belief is quite
correct,
quite important to have.
And I think the idea to decide whose life is it, you know, this idea that all of this stuff in the past keeps getting dragged along with you is now going away. People are finally wising up to it and saying, you know, no, I don't think so. Do you know what I mean? And what I thought was really interesting was the chapter about, you have it entitled The Ocean. And you had said whenever you felt lost or sad or alone, you'd go yourself down to the beach and your perspective would change. And I really, as I read the book, it was like I was walking, you were walking along, your father was above you, and you were kind of like not really hand in hand, but he was guiding you and saying, do you feel this? Do you sense this? Do you know this? And then when you went to the beach, you would say, oh, do you, it's almost like your father saying, oh, do you feel it? It's quiet, it's peace, it's calm, it's nature, it's what I had in my heart. And it's almost like, oh, okay, so you got it. You understood what he was potentially feeling or sensing in the ocean, right?
Yes, very well put. And I feel that way. Yeah, I think that was a big piece of why I'm still around, is that, you know, even when times were really tough for me as an adolescent, a teenager, no matter how bad it got, if I could get to the ocean, it was like being with my dad. And, you know, a lot of my memories of him were in and around the ocean, as we had talked about already. And when he died, he was cremated, and we after his service, we spread his ashes in the ocean in San Diego. And yeah, it was, you know, there was, I think, a piece of him that he, I don't know how to explain this really, but that he taught me as a youngster, or that I resonated with and connected with, that continued to live on and guide me after, as you said. Yeah, and so in the water, it was like, that was my time to be with my dad. It was like being with family.
Right.
And you know, that was limited to the ocean for a long time. Then eventually kind of started to see that, oh, you know, if the ocean's connected to the clouds, you know, and the clouds come over and rain drops down and waters the trees, and maybe he's there in the trees too, and it's not, you know, unique to the ocean.
It's like more a simplicity of life. Here is the best part of life. You have peace, you have love, you have nurturing, you have kindness, you have comfort, and you have warmth. And all of those things come from nature. And when you were in the ocean, he was probably at his peace, just like when people go to meditate and things like that. You know, they find their peace there. Well, I kind of do sometimes, but I kind of don't. But if you take me outside, you know, I can see faces in the clouds. I can find a spider web, even when I don't have my reading glasses on and I'm blind as a bat. I can see, you know, a universe in water. And I think right. all of that is about knowing that there's so much more than this human existence that we call our 9-to-5 day or whatever we classify it as our life. I think he really had something there where he was connected to the real purpose of life. It's just society yeah. got in the way, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And I really do look at, you know, him, you know, in the end, being a really incredible teacher for me. And, mm-hmm. you know, he had, I think, yeah, that realization in his core that connection with the ocean and that deep peace and interconnectedness, feeling of oneness. And then, yeah, there was a lot of confusion, you know, a lot of it based on mm-hmm. society and, you know, the external stuff that we talked about before, but it was, I'm so grateful to, have had this path and to have had him in my life and, give me those wonderful teachings from a young age.
Yeah. Because you wrote in your book, you know, that you'd have to face, you know, to face your father's suicide, you know, there was no avoiding it. And really, if you were holding his path and carrying on the race, you know, it's almost like mm-hmm. saying, but you know what, that's not the truth of it. I need to show you the truth of it. I almost see him like over you saying, that's not the truth of me. You have to find the me. You don't know me. You don't know my path. Let's walk down right. our path. So I think you did a great job in your book, again, Ashes in the Ocean, to walk down that path to say, you know what, there's so much more I didn't know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, very well said. And I think there's an interesting thing with this, with competition or, you know, attaining the external stuff where, you know, you can still, I think, specifically about competition or sports, you can still compete mm-hmm. at a really high level and do really well and not be completely, have your value be completely tied up in the outcome. You know what I mean?
Right.
Being able to separate a little bit and to go out and give it your best and to have, you know, to enjoy that. I think there's something beautiful about competition. And awesome if you win, you know. Awesome,
right.
You know, maybe the experience isn't as great if you lose, but it doesn't have that same impact on your, you know, sense of self or value.
You know, it's really interesting you just said that. And have you ever, I'll use a bunch of different examples to see how we can come to the same point. Let's say a winemaker has grapes in his yard all the time, and every year he's trying to get to that one that will touch his soul and enamor every one of his senses to the highest point where he almost like feels like he's in nirvana, and he wins a trophy for it or whatever, right? The swimmer does the same thing. He goes as fast as he can. He almost wants to get to that point where it's not about the competition. It's about that sense that all of a sudden he almost took his body and merged with the water. Then we may take it another step and we may say it's really not about, you know, it's about being able to be one with whatever it is that you're being with. So in other words, you know, the winemaker really wants to feel and be and all of his senses heightened. And is that not the same thing when you're in competition? You're waiting for all of those senses, not necessarily the outside ones, but when you're swimming in the water and you know how you can almost feel like you're just at that point where you might dissolve. You know what I mean? In other words, everything is heightened and you're saying, I'm one with the water. I know it. I feel it. I engage in it as every being. Don't you think maybe that's it too?
Yeah, I think that you're touching on yeah, like the, I think the essence of it's hard to name, right? There's you familiar mm-hmm. with the term flow, like psychological
right.
term flow, which
yeah.
is very similar to what you're talking about, which is mm-hmm. you know that heightened awareness. You're not really having. You're just sort of responding to the environment,
mm-hmm.
totally engaged, totally in the moment, and that's I think. You know, it's a really beautiful and magical thing in competition or out there. And I think that's such a wonderful aspect of life. And I think the trophy is nice too, but it's I think it's not quite as great as that experience.
Right. I think in a way he's had a conquest that he was looking for, that pinnacle peak where all of his outside world would dissolve and just the inner feeling could remain, you know. I think a lot of people really struggle with that. We see that quite often, is that people will say, I just want to feel this in this moment. And then a lot of times people say it's why they take drugs, and it's why they drink. There's that piece of them that is so heightened in it. It brings them to this state of being that they really kind of just want to just linger in. It just feels so much to them that that's where they want to be. And that's where I think we see a lot of people struggling to, you know, feel that.
Yeah, yeah, right. And I think something you said just kind of reminded me of this, of kind of the flip side of that, which is, you know, what do you do? How do you respond when you don't get what you want or when things
right.
don't go your way? And, you know, one of the, you know, I talked about in the book kind of going out on this journey and sort of trying to figure out, like, you know, who my dad was at a deeper level, and some of these themes came out, but with conversations I had with people who knew him. And one of the things I became aware of was that, you know, I think he, based on what other people were saying, had a very difficult time when he didn't get what he wanted. But a very difficult time with disappointment.
Right.
Like, couldn't handle it, you know? And it was like,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, built up and wanted to, you know, needed to push forward. And just, so that was another, I think, lesson that I maybe didn't write about explicitly, but just, you know, the value of, or not the value, but the importance of being able to be disappointed and, you know, and sit with that and what that feels like, and
mm-hmm.
and maybe have a nap or take care, you know, do whatever
right.
you know, coping you need to do and then continue
it's
on.
It's about accepting the world in all of its good, bad, and ugly sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
It's about saying,
yeah.
you know what, it is good enough that I'm parked on my butt today and I haven't got up. It is good enough.
Right.
That may, you know, that maybe today I didn't clean up the kitchen. It is good enough, you know, that, hey, I don't want to engage in that big party that I'm supposed to be at. Or it is good enough that, you know, okay, I still have on the same nightgown that I had on 2 days ago. Do you know what I mean? It's good enough. If that's where you need to be for that moment, it needs to be that you have to accept it and be okay with it. I think this conquest that we always have to be something outside of that, as if someone's looking at us. You know, and that someone that's looking at us is our own reflection. It's just we kind of can't figure that out until it's too late sometimes. You know, we want to think that it's always others that are going to find out, oh, my gosh, I don't want to send a selfie. I had the same shirt on yesterday kind of idea. It's like, are you seriously kidding me? You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's about
totally
shattering
that.
All of that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No one's keeping track. I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting thing.
Yeah, it's like, who cares? Can we, Sebastian, let's share, we're coming to the end of our show. I wanted to touch on this. When you talked about your, when you were finally complete with the story of walking your father's path and you closed the book and it was time, you know, to move into your phase then of you, and then you had the hip surgery. I think that was so interesting because so many times energetically and spiritually when, you know, I'm speaking with clients or whatever it might be, I'll say, okay, let's close this. And they'll say, why did I get sick? Well, what did you close just prior? You closed the book, and then what really came up for you in your hip was the energy of your, you know, energetic being that says, okay, you're done with me. Okay, then I don't need to be here anymore. So that's why you potentially needed that surgery. And then when you turned around and had a complication, it was because you said, hey, you know, I have to be better. Because you remember you said you wanted to, right after the first one, you were going to do better. You were going to go this. You were going to go that. It was like, who's in control here? You know?
Yeah.
And like, what kind of control just do you think have? And like, in other words, you still weren't good enough with you being good enough. It was still that push thing, you know? And I think.
Correct.
Sometimes until you realize that I don't have to do that, I may choose, but I don't have to. I think in being able to shed all of those old imprints is really, it's really a challenge for people. They say, oh, but I did all the work. Well, you mustn't have done all the work. There must be something left to do. And I think you really came to that. Wasn't that a great closing to the book, right?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I kind of, as you mentioned, I came away, you know, went on this big journey, traveled around the world, talked to a lot of people, came away with these lessons, went back to South Africa, I still had some of my dad's ashes, spread the remains of his ashes in his hometown. I was like, it's done. And then come back and have, all of a sudden I have this hip pain, have surgery a little while later. And then, And then I thought, okay, I get it. I got to just chill. And then had the complication. And it was such an interesting thing because I remember being like, well, I thought I figured this out. And it was just like, here's a reminder for you. Obviously, there's still something kicking around in here that I need to be, was defining myself in my case by my physical ability, my ability to compete with bodyboarding or to teach yoga, which I've been doing for a number of years. And I think that complication really helped me. It's just like, okay, full acceptance, full surrender. And I'm okay as I am. Right.
Yeah. And it wasn't about all those labels. It wasn't about you had to hurry up and get out to do something again. Or you even wrote down, the questions, oh, I have to make money. I got to get out and do. And wasn't that, if you go right back to the beginning of your book, that's exactly what your father was saying in the quest he was on.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, well, darn it, I didn't give up that after all. I'm still running the dogma,
Right. And I think a piece of it was I think I came away from that journey with the intellectual understanding of these lessons, I'm going to focus on my internal motivation rather than external, be in the moment, like check the boxes. And then the lived experience of the embodiment was not quite developed. Right. And I think it's a continual development. Continual learning.
Oh, it sure is. I don't think there's ever a beginning and an end. I think it's really about the prospects of where you are and your perception in the moment in time. And there'll be times when things will shatter that and you'll say, oh, okay, so I guess maybe I'm done with that, or maybe that's not important to me anymore. I find this a lot with people, and they say, well, I'll use you as an example. I'm a yoga instructor, and then all of a sudden, they'll have trouble with their back, and they won't be able to walk anymore. And sometimes we say, well, if you would use your mind over matter, you could do it again. Well, maybe you're just done with that path. And maybe you're just to be able to teach somebody something else in a different path now. I think we get so hung up on our identity being our outside projection, that we really get so stuck in there. And any time that somebody scratches it, like, keying your car, you're really like coming out like a demon against it, right?
Right. Yeah, I think absolutely. In my own case, I just kind of replaced swimmer with, yoga and yogi, a yoga instructor, with, to my dad's deal. And when that became threatened by my physical, injury, then, it was like, who am I? What am I? I can't, my path is to be this, incredible teacher. I can't do it unless I can, I can't do that if I can't do the splits or these, moves, these, crazy yoga moves. And it's like, what am I? It's the same exact thing. So I think that's another interesting piece of that is that, in my dad's case, it was, business, swimming, back. And it could easily be meditation, yoga, diet. I could replace those things with seemingly, more like, I think, good things. But you can use that with anything.
Absolutely. And I think it's about being able to be fluid in life and to shift and alter. I think sometimes, I look at myself, I've got a zillion different careers, a zillion different jobs, a million different spouses. I've been in a million different places. And I think of it really as my exploration of everything around me, and continue to moving through it and like, oh, that's cool. I get it. Let me show me all the sides of it. And then I move on to the next thing. And sometimes we say, do we want to carry around the weight of what we feel like we're stuck in? Because that's all we know. And then we accept it. People will say, oh, but I'm doing it for love. I'm doing it because this is what I'm meant to be. And you know darn well, even when they're just saying that, even when I'm saying that, I'm hearing it in my voice, is that sometimes those people potentially are saying, oh, but this is what I have to do because that's what my head is telling me. And they forgot about that their heart and their soul has a voice, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said.
Tough place to be, I'll tell you, when you really have to get back to that being. But I think you did a great job again, Sebastian, in your book. And could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be great.
Sure. So my website is sebastiansloven.com. And the book, again, is called Ashes in the Ocean. And that is available, the book is available on Amazon and you know, Barnes & Noble and all, basically all other book platforms. And I also have, I have another website, business website called natureunplugged.com. It's, my wife and I founded a business kind of cultivating wellness through healthy relationships with technology and helping folks reconnect with nature more often.
It's absolutely, you know, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. You know, I think that sometimes we say, is there an outside world? And that's the one I'm dancing in. And, you know, I'm not the type of person. I can walk from my door to my car and I could see, you know, a spider hanging off a spider web, or I could see, you know, a crack in the sidewalk, or I could hear the water dripping, you know, a bit away. I kind of am tuned to that. But so many times I'll get in the car and I'll say to somebody, did you see anything on your way from here to here? And they're going, what's the problem? We're late. Get in the car. And I'm going, oh, you're so missing the world, you know?
Yeah. Easy to do in the, with our little, you know, smart devices and screens and stuff.
Right.
Yeah,
but it's so much, but really with your site, you know, Nature Unplugged, it's really about being able to connect to that, because you know what, if we don't pay attention to that, there's going to be some serious implications, because the world around us will be changing. And then as we see it now, people are saying, why is the water so polluted? Well, what did you do to pollute it? You know,
right.
Or the ground is so dirty. Well, did you throw something down on the ground last week, last year? You know, and I think being able to be responsible for our place in the world is really what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's how we cultivate, you know, environmental stewardship. And it's also good for us as individuals to, you know,
right,
connect with the outdoors and respect it.
Absolutely. Well, Sebastian, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. If you'd like to find out more information about Sebastian Slovin, again, the book is Ashes in the Ocean, A Son's Story of Living Through and Learning from His Father's Suicide, please do click on the link on the bottom of today's show page and you'll go directly to his website. And it truly is about being able to be open to everything around you and saying, you know what, this doesn't work for me. Fabulous. Raise your hand. Swing it. You know, get it out there in the sky. Listen to some radio shows. Ask some people some questions. Go around. Delve into the dark and delve into the light. You're bound to find some answers, but even then, you'll have a great journey. And it's really about being able to see where the journey of life is taking you. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.